From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After a grueling 12 hours of debate over rules between House impeachment managers and President Donald Trump's legal team on Tuesday, going into the early hours of Wednesday morning, Republicans, by and large, won. Exercising his tight grip on power, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made the most modest of concessions to Democrats in order to appease some of the moderate senators in his party. As of now, there will be no new documents subpoenaed and possibly no witnesses called in at all for a Senate impeachment trial over President Trump's fitness to remain in office. If the most likely scenario is Trump's eventual acquittal, is it worth spending all this time going through the motions of an impeachment trial? My guest is Alan Hirsch, instructor in the humanities and chair of the Justice and Law Studies program at Williams College. He's the author of numerous works of legal scholarship, many books as well, including Impeaching the President, Past, Present, and Future, and For the People, What the Constitution Really Says About Your Rights. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Thank you.
So in going through this whole process, and it's sort of quite ceremonial with certain things set in stone and other things to be decided, what is your broad view of what the impeachment of President Trump, and he has been impeached in the House, what this impeachment and the trial means for the country?
Well, one of the things I caution against in my book is an impeachment that is purely symbolic or ceremonial. I think if there's really no chance of convicting and removing a president, there's something to be said for not impeaching him in the first place. However, two things caused me to question that view in this case. One is you do have the court of public opinion. There is an election in November, and it is valuable for the American people to understand what happened that triggered this impeachment. And second, at the risk of being naive, I'd like to think there are at least some senators who are open-minded, who just might be willing to give this case a chance, even though obviously so far the Republicans have rallied around the flag.
Right. We had, or many people had put some sort of faith in folks like Senators Mitt Romney and Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, those moderate senators who have expressed criticism of the president or concern that he was clearly abusing power and engaging in corrupt behavior. But in the end, they all rallied behind Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has very openly promised a rigged trial.
So far, what you say appears to be true. I think it's a little premature to be writing off Senators Collins, Murkowski, Romney, Cory Gardner, Tillis, North Carolina. As you said, the handful of senators who seem to be at least in theory open to the idea that maybe they don't have to take their president's side. So let's wait and see. There hasn't been a decision made yet on witnesses. So far, you're right, everything has been in lockstep, and the so-called moderates have been a disappointment. But I think it's not fair to them until they hear the evidence. At least they hear the presentations for the next 3 days, and then they make a determination. Remember, it only takes four of them, and we will be hearing from witnesses. So as I said, I'm trying to be optimistic, although right now there may not be a lot of cause for that.
And just to remind our audience, there is in order to actually remove the president from office, you need a supermajority in the Senate, which appears all but impossible because it would require the defections of about a dozen Republicans, which just does not seem to be something that would happen. But in order to also quickly dismiss the impeachment, how many votes does McConnell need?
51.
So he may get that unless the folks that we mentioned earlier, the Romney and the Murkowskis, decide to put the Constitution over their party. So we shall certainly see. Now, one of the issues in terms of the presentation of documentation is quite critical. Democrats on Tuesday, the House impeachment managers, attempted to make a case for why it was so important to get documents from the White House, from the State Department, and from the Office of Management and Budget, because the Trump defense case is resting on limited evidence, right? They're making their case that Trump did nothing wrong because there's, in their mind, no evidence to show it. But of course, they're also, and Trump is also, limiting what evidence is made available. And that's critically important.
Right. So that's exactly right. A lot of Democrats and their supporters in the media and elsewhere are saying that a trial requires witnesses. Anything else is a sham. And that's not technically true. There are cases that are resolved by summary judgment in civil cases, by dismissal in criminal cases, without the benefit of witnesses, because the judge determines that they're not necessary. But those are cases where the facts are agreed on. And the parties can say, well, look, this is what happened. And if the judge determines that even if that's all true, and they will accept that for the purposes of such a ruling, it doesn't state a cause of action, okay. But here, that's not what's happening. The Trump lawyers are not agreeing on the facts. They're claiming, just as you said, this was a perfect phone call, to echo the president. They're denying that he abused his office, that he held up legally appropriated aid solely for his personal political benefit. So as long as they deny that, we could use witnesses. We could use someone like John Bolton, who allegedly claimed he regarded this as a drug deal, to explain what he meant by that, why he regarded this as improper, what exactly was going on. So as long as there is an important dispute over what happened, it seems to me witnesses are imperative. Witnesses and documents, although that appears to be a lost cause.
And of course, Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, has also become part of Trump's legal team. He's claiming he's only restricting himself to deciding whether or not Trump's conduct rose to a constitutional violation. And in many ways, his argument amounts to, even if the president abused power, it doesn't mean that his actions are impeachable, which, of course, the flip side of that is it's okay for a president to abuse his power.
Right. So he's claiming he has to have violated a specific criminal statute. Now, there are a lot of things that are not known about impeachment because the Constitution says very little about it and there isn't much precedent. But it seems to be there is one safe proposition, and that is agreed upon by just about everyone who has thought about or studied the matter, who looks at the Constitution and the history surrounding it, and that is that this Dershowitz position is baseless. The one thing, the argument always gets made, but it has been traditionally dismissed, and every time it is made, it is dismissed, and a consensus is reached that you do not have to commit a crime on the books in order to be impeached. It's really a ridiculous position. If the president were in a state of drunkenness for months on end, or a president pardoned every single person of his own party, I could give you dozens and dozens of examples of behavior that is not criminal, strictly speaking, but that does amount to an abuse of power. And it's exactly the sort of thing the framers had in mind, an abuse of power. As Alexander Hamilton put it, an abuse of the public trust. So Dershowitz is coming to make an argument basically because no one else dares to make it.
Now, in terms of the media coverage of the Senate impeachment trial, it certainly depends on which media outlet you read. But some in the media have been casting this whole thing as here's the reality of the Democrats. This is what the Democrats are saying. And here's what the Republicans are saying. And it seems as though there is no reality. But there is, right? I mean, there are facts in this case. And when Republicans say that there's no evidence that the president has done nothing impeachable, on an objective basis, if one was being faithful to facts, one could pretty clearly say Republicans are wrong.
It's interesting. I tried very hard in my book to present a neutral, objective, nonpartisan view of the impeachment process. And I find myself, I find it really difficult to adopt the both sides, the pure, equal, it's just two sides and they disagree analysis. Because there really is an asymmetry at this point, which is the Democrats are asking for more evidence, more witnesses, let the truth be heard, and the Republicans are trying to shut it down. That's number one. In addition, the Democrats are making substantive arguments. They're saying, here's what happened in Ukraine, here's the evidence for it. And to a great extent, on Tuesday, the opening of this process, the Republicans were relying on process arguments. The Democrats have been unfair to the president. They did this or that wrong in the House. They should have called this or that witness then. And they're unwilling, at least so far, to grapple with the merits of the charges.
Now, the proceedings began in earnest on Wednesday when arguments began being read. And so essentially, from what I understand it, both sides get, 3 days to present their arguments to the Senate and really to the American people. And it seems as though the House impeachment managers are on top of their game, partly because they have facts on their side, right?
I think so far, from what we've seen, they've made an impressive presentation. They're well prepared.
Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and many of the other House impeachment managers have legal experience. Then you have the Trump legal team. And by the way, Trump said from Davos that he wished he could sit and watch the proceedings in the Senate. But his team includes Pat Cipollone. We talked about Dershowitz, but Pat Cipollone, who's the White House counsel, was also in many ways, evidence suggests that he himself was directly implicated around the Ukraine scandal. Shouldn't his presence be questioned as part of the legal team?
If he theoretically could be a fact witness, then it should be. I have to say, I'm not really familiar with his alleged involvement, so I don't want to opine on that.
And Trump seems to go back and forth, but of course, that's a president. He contradicts himself literally every other minute. And one of the things that he said while in Davos on Wednesday was that he would have no problem with witnesses testifying. And he'd like to see the long version of this trial play out. In the past, he has wanted it to be done with as quickly as possible. I think it seems as though Trump is aware of the optics of this impeachment trial, right?
It's very interesting. All the polling has been consistent that the American people want to see witnesses overwhelmingly. So he may be responding to that if he's vacillating, at least verbally, on his feelings about witnesses. There's disagreement about whether he should be removed, but it's been pretty consistent that people want to see the evidence. And that's encouraging. That's obviously the right mindset.
Was it a victory for House impeachment managers that the entire evidence from the impeachment articles that led to the impeachment articles was going to be entered into the Senate record? Or was that getting in the way of presenting it in a more detailed way in front of the Senate?
They can still present it, so I don't think it's getting in the way, but I think it's an extremely limited victory. I mean, we're talking about evidence that is already public. Everyone knows it. Whether it's technically in the record or not is ultimately not going to be decisive. What matters now is whether that record can be expanded, whether we can get new witnesses and new evidence that can really lock down the case.
Three different things happened since the House passed their articles of impeachment that could have a bearing on the Senate impeachment trial, but it's not clear if it'll make it into the trial. One is Lev Parnas, the associate of Giuliani, who was charged with campaign finance violations and who has a lot to say about the Ukraine withholding of military aid to Ukraine. The other thing was the Government Accountability Office judging that the withholding of aid was indeed illegal. And then, late on Tuesday night, just minutes before midnight, the Office of Management and Budget released 192 pages of documentation to not House impeachment managers, but to an oversight group, an ethics group called American Oversight, which sued using a FOIA request for this documentation. And this documentation adds to the already mounting evidence. This is new evidence after the House passed their articles of impeachment. What role should this play in a Senate impeachment trial?
I think it should be introduced. I mean, it's interesting. You've heard Republicans say, nope, the only evidence we can look at is what the House looked at. Now, that's sort of a novel legal position. It's as if when evidence is presented to a grand jury and then it indicts a defendant, that then at that person's trial, the prosecution can only introduce the evidence that the grand jury saw. That has never been the case even in the criminal justice system. And obviously, there's reason to be more flexible in this kind of trial, which is not strictly a judicial trial, a kind of hybrid between a political event and a judicial trial. So if anything, it should be more flexible. And even in the criminal justice system, as new evidence comes to light, it can be introduced. Now, the defense is entitled to have time to view that evidence. If they want to move for an adjournment, that's fine. So they have a chance to deal with that evidence. No problem with that. But the idea that the evidence can't even be looked at because it arrived past a certain date is absurd.
The role of Chief Justice John Roberts is one that we, you know, have to see how it plays out. Because, first of all, impeachment is not something that's done very often. It's happened such a few handful of times in the country's history that, you know, many people kind of aren't sure of how exactly it should be, because it's not a legal court proceeding either. Now, on Tuesday night, John Roberts made a unusual admonishment where he basically singled out both teams, the Trump impeachment defense team and the House impeachment managers, and he admonished them equally. Does that bode well to you or not? Because again, he's equating two different teams.
Right. Well, so first, you're exactly right that his role is basically he's writing on a blank slate. The Constitution says only that the Chief Justice shall preside. And historically, the Senate has written rules which says that the Chief Justice can make rulings on things like evidentiary disputes, but then the Senate can override that ruling with a majority vote. And I think it's generally accepted that the role of the Chief Justice is fairly minor. He's not expected to make important substantive decisions, or if he does, the Senate can overrule them. The intervention you spoke of Tuesday night, I found encouraging. Yes, he admonished both sides, but I think that was almost a matter of etiquette more than anything else. I think he was sending a message that there is a level of decorum that we should be holding these sides to. There's a degree of seriousness that those remarks conveyed. And so I found that encouraging.
Right. One of the things that he seemed to be addressing was White House counsel Pat Cipollone's admonishment to Gerald Nadler, saying that Nadler owed the president an apology, owed the president's family an apology. And, you know, and this has often been the case where since Trump has been in office, he and his supporters have claimed over and over again that he's just being unfairly persecuted, that people just, for some unknowable reason, don't like Trump and just want to unfairly victimize him or harm him. But, you know, this is the Senate we're talking about here, and it just seems like those sorts of arguments shouldn't be presented.
Yeah, so absolutely. Political grandstanding should be limited, if not eliminated, from these proceedings. But I do want to say that apropos this notion that he's being persecuted, it's important to remember. It now seems like a lifetime ago, but when the Mueller report came out and there were some people who wanted impeachment to be pushed then, and Nancy Pelosi has always resisted it. And she was absolutely resisting many calls from the Democrats' base for impeachment until this Ukraine business came to light. And so I think she totally deserves the benefit of the doubt, and by extension, the Democrats, that they are not simply looking to impeach this president willy-nilly, but they legitimately found that, and I think correctly so, the holdup of Ukraine aid a really serious problem.
The issue of impeachment is such a serious one. The Clinton impeachment seemed to be such an abuse, especially in hindsight, looking at just the way in which our culture has changed. It seems such an abuse of the tool of impeachment, you know, that he would be impeached for lying about an affair. In today's day and age, we just accept that, yeah, sure, if the president has affairs, so what? And it seems as though it is something that needs to be taken seriously. But I wonder if we're entering a realm where a future Democratic president getting into office will be vindictively impeached by Republicans who might hold power in the House.
Right. This is exactly the problem with frivolous use of impeachment. Once it becomes a political football, it ceases to be a valuable constitutional tool, which is how it was intended. And a lot of us said this at the time of the Clinton impeachment, that impeachment could be habit forming. And sure enough, there were calls for the impeachment of George W. Bush, for Barack Obama, almost literally before they took office. And then you get a situation like the current situation, which I think is much more serious, much more deserving of impeachment. And you have lots of people who are just, it's habit forming. They just think, oh, impeachment is just political. And that is, if it happens, that it is simply used against any president that one dislikes, we will have converted an indispensable constitutional tool into something meaningless.
So finally, Trump has also claimed that the impeachment is simply a way for the Democrats to try to rig the election and to try to remove him from office because he thinks that they can't actually win an election. But isn't it absolutely critical to make clear that when a president behaves in the way in which Trump has, that he has to face some consequence, whether it's actual removal from office, which in this case looks unlikely because he's protected by the Republicans in the Senate, or even just the kind of public, I don't want to say shaming, but, you know, public unveiling of his corrupt deeds, so that it's clear that he pays, that there's some accountability.
Yes, and the irony of the accusation that Democrats are trying to undo an election is that precisely what President Trump is accused of is soliciting foreign interference with the election. And if we let that go unprobed, much less unpunished, then we are signaling that it's okay to solicit foreign interference with an election. So that's one of the reasons I think that the House had to move, had to impeach him, and I think the Senate has to take this seriously, is that it involved interference with an American election, the conduct at question.
Finally, Alan, how do you think this is going to play out? You seem hopeful that some of the moderate Republicans will not move for a quick dismissal of the trial.
I fear ultimately this will be seen as Alice in Wonderland, verdict first, trial later, and not much of a trial either. But yes, I'm not giving up all hope until we get Susan Collins and Mitt Romney. They will have their chance to say at least they want to see witnesses. And if that happens, that will all be to the good.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insight on this.
My pleasure, Sonali.
Alan Hirsch is an instructor in the humanities and chair of Justice and Law Studies program at Williams College. He's the author of numerous works of legal scholarship and many books, including Impeaching the President, Past, Present, and Future, and For the People, What the Constitution Really Says About Your Rights. We've been discussing the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.